Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How would you describe Mississippi?
Beautiful and at the same time, sometimes ugly, very complex place.
I'm a proud Mississippian. I live here. I'm going to die here.
It is an interesting place to live and work. People are storytellers.
We've got some of the best writers in American history. Richard Wright, Udell Welty, William Faulkner.
There's a particular genre and style of the blues that comes from this region. It's good stuff.
We often get overlooked and negatively characterized.
I don't have a lot of tolerance with folks that treat us as a flyover state. You can't ignore Mississippi.
It's actually full of really great people. I mean, yeah, we have our problems.
We've got a lot of scars.
Long-term disinvestment.
Abject poverty.
The Klan.
Mass-scale intimidation.
It was a race to the bottom to see who would be the most segregationist.
This was a dangerous place to be.
We're going backwards because we won't face reality.
If we do not confront our history, we will just repeat it.
Welcome to Mississippi. It's the last stop on our road trip through the South. Mitch and I met up at the Foxfire Ranch, a beautiful farm and music venue with historically Black roots, to kick off our look at the state.
All right, can I pay homage to Mississippi while we're here?
My God, do it.
Mississippi has produced some spectacular culture, music, art, history, science.
Food, sports, writing.
And, you know, of course, the great Jen Palmieri, who was from Pascagoula.
Born in Pascagoula.
Pascagoula, Mississippi.
So it's about 3 million people live in this state. It has the highest per capita Black population in the country. Complete partisan control. Republicans. State's not doing well.
Yeah. The Democratic Party basically left the playing field in the South. You've heard me mention the young lady who said to me, talent is equally distributed in the South, but opportunity is not. So, like, sure. North Carolina and Georgia are states that are on the upswing. Mississippi's very, very different.
The state just continues to fall behind. It's among the poorest, lack of investment, lack of infrastructure, things like the Jackson water crisis.
Exactly.
People living in modern-day America cannot have clean running water in their own.
Yep.
There's a lot of corruption in this state, and it just goes unaddressed when it stays in the dark. So much of the press had collapsed here. Now there is Mississippi Today, independent nonprofit news outlet.
These guys are shedding a light on a lot of the conflicts that otherwise would have kind of just happened in the dark.
On today's episode, we look at what happens when a place is overlooked and what it will take to see it differently. This is Long Play, Winning the South, Episode 6, Mississippi.
Covering politics in this state is never a dull moment.
There's never a shortage of material. We have lots of crazy characters in our politics. Revealing things has power. Telling the truth has power.
Comfort the afflicted, afflict the comfortable. I still believe in that.
To start finding answers, I headed down to Jackson to the headquarters of an organization that's working to keep a close eye on the state, Mississippi Today. I spoke to their editor-in-chief, Emily Wagster Pettis.
Enjoy the view. We get to look at the governor's mansion from here.
Keeping an eye on the governor. Wow.
Yep. At this point, we are the largest newsroom in the state. The downside of it is that, well, like, we're the largest because others are shrinking. The media landscape has changed.
How would you describe Mississippi?
I've been covering politics since 1994. And my career has been in Mississippi by choice. It's just a really interesting place to cover. Voting is very much along racial lines. I mean, there are white people who vote for Democrats. There are a few Black people who vote for Republicans. But really, you can look at race and party as like the equivalent.
And now it feels just like one party rule.
I mean, pretty much, yes. The Republicans in this state have a top-down infrastructure. The Democrats are a little more chaotic. Democrats in Mississippi have spent a lot of time with their infighting, a lot of turf wars. The Republicans make a lot of decisions here in their caucus meetings behind closed doors.
Right.
And the State Ethics Commission has not stopped them.
There's just no recourse.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mississippi Today won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of the welfare fraud scandal.
This had to do with the way welfare money was spent under the administration of Republican Governor Phil Bryant. Some of the spending was, let's just say, non-traditional.
So the paper is being sued for defamation by the former governor.
The court case is still going on.
Yeah.
But our journalists are not working in fear. We are still writing stories that might make some of the politicians in the state uncomfortable. We are not retreating from our mission.
Mitch and I met back up to talk about how that fight to report the truth is made even harder by a long history the state is still confronting.
You come down here, the ghost of race is with everybody all of the time. The practice of lynching is still in people's minds, and the system covering up things has caused this anxiety and this lack of trust, so that even today, there are a number of deaths of young African Americans. The first supposition, many in the Black community, is I don't really trust what they're telling me.
The young Black man found dead at the Delta State University.
The Hinds County coroner has identified the woman found hanging from a tree behind a Jackson home this week.
The family of an 18-year-old who died after a 4th of July trip is demanding answers.
I don't know what needs to happen in Mississippi. It's sort of a reckoning or coming to terms with a violent past. Wright Thompson is a writer from Clarksdale, Mississippi. Probably best known for sports, really great ESPN writer. He wrote a book called The Barn about the murder of Emmett Till.
Emmett Till was from Chicago.
He was from Chicago, came here, 14 years old. They said that he was whistling at a white woman and was kidnapped and murdered.
His mother insisted on having an open coffin because she wanted the world to see what hatred did. And it was a transformative event.
The book is sort of like exposing the blast circumference of complicity, conscious ignorance, unawareness.
I sat down with Wright Thompson to dive deeper into the history of this place, what's been forgotten or hidden, and how that still shapes life here today.
I wanted to start with that. The duality of the Southern thing, which some writers and songwriters from the South will just even refer to it as the duality. Yeah. You know, it's like, I love the South, I hate the South. Do you think those things can coexist?
I think they have to coexist. Modern politics, like, only reward purity. And nothing about having a conversation about how anyone feels about anything in the South is pure. We're still trying to figure out how to be a people when we have lost our central reason for being here in the first place.
Cotton. Being that.
The price of cotton collapsed 103 years ago and essentially has never recovered. I think all the ways in which you felt Southern, most of it was rural. And so the rural South almost doesn't exist. It is a state buried under layer, under layer, under layer of mistruths and forgotten histories and mythologies.
Why did you decide to write a book about Emmett Till?
I realized that my family farm was 23 miles away from the barn where Emmett Till had been murdered. And I didn't know that and, in fact, had never heard of that barn. The barn was written for kids like me who grow up here, who want to know what happened.
To make sure that those things just don't disappear.
Because they will disappear. This is real. This was being taught in a Mississippi high school a year ago in the Mississippi State History book. Emmett Till, a young Black man from Chicago, allegedly made a pass at a white woman in a rural store. Two men kidnapped him, beat him, killed him, and threw his body in the Tallahatchie River. The coverage of the trial and the acquittal of his accused murderers, who later admitted their guilt, painted a poor picture of Mississippi and its white citizens.
The guilt being limited to those two men only.
And that the real horror of this murder was how bad it made the rest of us look. It's 1955 again, and we have to do a lot of this stuff over now. If there's going to be a tribe of us, and I talk about Mississippians,
yes,
then we have to start from a place of saying, this is what happened here, and this is who we are, and we are all of it.
To learn more about that violent past, but also the people who stood up against it, Mitch went to speak with Charles Taylor, the executive director of the NAACP in Mississippi.
You know, it's a lot of history in this building.
I bet.
My office is Mayor Garver's office.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a lot of big shoes to fill.
We'll be demonstrating here until freedom comes to Negroes here in Jackson, Mississippi.
They don't talk about him as much.
Yeah. He was the first field secretary for the state of Mississippi, for the Mississippi NAACP. Yeah. And, I mean,
when you think about assassinations in the 1960s, you know, they forget.
Yeah.
Did they ever find his killer?
They did, but it was in 1994, I believe, before he got convicted of that murder. Many folks in the state of Mississippi celebrated the fact that Meg Evers was assassinated. At that time, the killing of a black man, even a black man as prominent as Meg Evers, was one that you felt like you could be swept under the rug.
The history of Mississippi says that after slavery, we came in with Reconstruction. And then, of course, Jim Crow came in. When Jim Crow came in, it erased all of the black gains.
Yes. Here's the thing that's interesting about that history after Reconstruction. That was a mass attack on black political power. It spread across the South. Mississippi rewrote its constitution in 1890, and they basically put into law Jim Crow. It was legal to discriminate based on race. The disenfranchising of voters. There was mass incarceration where you had, you know, slavery by another name. But what they don't talk about is how, you know, you have black folks pleading to the federal government, consistently saying, hey, these attacks are real. These attacks are deliberate and intentional. And it was a blind eye given to them, and it wasn't until it was too late.
What does it mean to be a black voter in Mississippi today?
Oh, it means a great deal. Jumping to 2026, Mississippi has four members of Congress, one of which is Congressman Benny G. Thompson. He lived in Jim Crow, Mississippi, and, you know, ultimately was able to get elected in the early 90s. From a state like Mississippi, he quite literally is fighting for our democracy across the country.
So Mitch visited with Congressman Thompson to talk about what he's fighting for and what the recent Supreme Court decision in the voting rights case, Louisiana versus Calais, will mean for black voters in the state.
You right now are the only Democrat and African-American in Mississippi elected to Congress. What is your perception of what it's like to be African-American in Mississippi today?
The impact of the hatred and the demagoguery from the 50s and 60s is still with us today. And so if I look at where we are at this moment in history with Donald Trump as president, my argument is we're going backward, you know, because what he's promoting is an alternate reality that's patently untrue.
So because you live in history, and you not only lived it, you saw it, you were impacted by it. And so I want you to address this specifically. Justice Roberts opined that we are in a post-racial America now.
On my side of the track, we know it's bullshit. You only hear white folk talking about post-racial.
The Calais decision is in effect now. Mississippi will go into session, and they're going to address, is it just going to be redistricting?
Well, that's what they say. This is just the beginning of them trying to reset the table.
We're talking about council races. We're talking about state legislative races, state senate. Do you know, does Mississippi have more black elected officials than most other
than
states?
Than any other state.
And your expectation is that in the not too distant future, you will see a wholesale change in that because of the way they draw these districts.
Absolutely.
Can you separate politics and race in the South?
No.
Exactly.
Absolutely not.
And they knew that.
That's right.
I met with Mitch to talk through what we'd heard across the state.
where there's real efforts to make change and where those efforts have been lacking.
You're in a moment where there could potentially be a wave happening.
Part of the problem is that you're not building any Democratic Party infrastructure. As somebody who spent my early years here, worked in Democratic politics for a long time, has always bothered me, is the lack of attention from national Democrats to invest in the state. It's got to be organic. It's got to come from people here. Brandon Presley, his father was first cousins with Elvis. He ran in 2023, got the closest that anyone has since the last time a Democrat was elected governor,
right,
which was in 1999.
So I went to visit Brandon at his home in Water Valley to talk more about what it will take for Democrats to win here.
I've made it into a little bit of a world headquarters for an ex-be-down old politician.
Oh, man, this has got a lot of history in it. Oh, my gosh, look at this.
Jimmy, Rosalynn, and the King.
All the way with LBJ.
Johnson had a genius above genius of how to make this big old behemoth of government move on behalf of folks that everybody else had forgot about. Voting rights, civil rights, Medicaid, Medicare, 400 pieces of legislation in 5 years. And Robert Caro says, and I think that's where we've got to think about as we look to our leaders, no matter what their political party is. You know, the old saying, the old quote, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Caro says power reveals.
Ooh.
It reveals who you are.
You were mayor when you were 23.
Yeah. I was elected May the 1st of 2001 as mayor of my hometown of Nettleton. The youngest mayor at the time, I served 2 terms. And then I ran for the Public Service Commission, reelected every time for 4 terms. And then I ran for governor in 2023. And we got darn close.
You lost by 3 percentage points. And like one thing that comes up time and time again is the lack of Democratic infrastructure.
Absolutely.
In the state.
The lack of infrastructure is key. You're looking at a guy that got within 26,000 votes of being governor. Imagine if there'd been a concerted effort for years to try to harness the political levers, if you will, of organization and people in those counties. I think we could have got there. You can't expect Mississippi to move forward light years ahead without the investment that is in the eyes of being farming and not hunting. There can't be parachute operations 60, 90 days right before a major election. I tried to take even some of my own campaign money that was left over and sort of plow the ground so that the next candidates don't have to do what I had to do, and that is go to communities where there's no infrastructure. We don't have the luxury of leaving any stone unturned.
The role of party infrastructure and investment is something that came up again and again in Mitch and my conversations across the state.
Do you think that the National Democratic Party has forsaken Mississippi?
I think the National Democratic Party has forsaken the South.
What happens when a state gets left behind the way Mississippi has? There are some green shoots of things that are happening here, from improving literacy to new journalism outlets. But everybody you talk to here is like, we need a lot of work. We need a Stacey Abrams-like effort here. But still, it's so tantalizing because the margins are relatively small that you need to move in order to get a Senate win. There's another Senate race. Scott Colomb is the Democratic nominee. He's a good candidate.
I think he is. District attorney.
Big law and order guy. He has proven the ability to cross party lines, cross racial lines. Charles Taylor from the NAACP has this theory. If you can get the midterm turnout up, the Democrat could eke out a win.
He needs the black vote share to be 36%.
The overall vote.
Overall vote. And then he needs about 25% of the white share.
Sort of the question is, can you spend a little bit of money here, get the black turnout up, then you can get it win.
I went to Columbus to talk to Democratic Senate nominee Scott Colomb about that strategy and what he's running on.
What do people in Mississippi tell you? What issues are on their mind? What are they most concerned about?
Cost, 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 and corruption. I take on corruption no matter who does it, because I understand we have to build trust in our government. We have to build trust in our elected officials. And what I'm offering the people is not just to be another Democratic senator. I'm offering them to be Mississippi's senator, somebody that fights to make their life better. If you actually have been paying attention to Mississippi, you will see that we're ripe for a victory. And the conditions are perfect because we have corruption that's costing Mississippians. We got a Senator, Cindy Hyde-Smith, that's scared to show up, who's voting against our interests. And we got a candidate, you know, God willing, that understands how to win.
DSCC made $40 million in investments for Black, Brown, Asian American voters in Senate races, and they did not give any money to the state that has the highest percentage of Black voters, the state of Mississippi. What do you think that's about?
Well, I'll tell you, Mississippi, we're a state that's always had to do a lot with little. You talk to Brandon Presley, he got within 27,000 votes of winning. Right.
And you broke the supermajority.
We broke the supermajority in the state Senate without very much attention. Look at our primary. No media attention. Absolutely nobody paid attention to my primary. We increased turnout 90% over the past Democratic Senate election.
Okay.
Without the attention of the national media, without a bunch of money being spent in our state, we're used to being ignored. Yeah. And what we want is people that understand that our country cannot succeed if places like Mississippi don't get attention, dignity, and what they deserve. When Mississippi has done well, our country has done well. When Mississippi has been ignored, our country has suffered for it. And if people across the country care about our party being a 50-state party, I mean, how could you not compete in a place like Mississippi? That's what's astounding to me. And it's because they've just been conditioned not to care. And we have to change that, because if we don't, we're going to continue to not be a party that represents working people.
I called Aaron to catch up after my conversation with Scott Colomb.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. I mean, we have 4,000 Black journalists here in Atlanta for our national convention. It's pretty amazing. But I miss you. What do you have to do?
Right now, we're in Columbus, Mississippi, the friendly city, they call it. We spoke with Senate candidate Scott Colomb. And then I talked to the editor-in-chief of Mississippi Today. I said, are there any groups here that are really making a difference? And she said, yes, the Mississippi Black Women's Roundtable.
Of course, yes.
They're providing direct assistance to women that can't pay their utility bills or having problem with childcare, but also getting them on the ladder of engagement to show, like, okay, you should be petitioning your state representative to say that this matters to you.
They're very tapped in to kind of what the issues are on the ground. You don't get that unless you are in relationship with these communities all year round and not just when it's time for their output. What does it mean to think about their input as well?
That's something Carla Edwards, Melissa Overton, and Angela Grayson from the Mississippi Black Women's Roundtable echoed when I went to speak with them about their work organizing women to engage civically in the state.
All of our work integrates with each other, from the voter education to providing assistance, because we know that you're not going to listen to what we say about voting if you don't have enough food on your table, if your lights are off. It all correlates with each other.
And also within that, we hear the stories. We're all one paycheck away from.
These are the women that we are bringing to the Capitol to tell their stories on our Capitol Day.
This is helping women to become more civically engaged. What's the theory about why women in particular are positioned to become these kinds of leaders?
Well, number one, in Mississippi, Black women face the most disparities of any other group. The pay gap for Black women is one of the greatest among any other group in America right now. And the Black maternal mortality rate is the worst in the country and some places in the world.
We are the closest to the solutions because the problems affect us the most.
Melissa, can you talk about why Black women in particular are a good place to start in trying to spread civic engagement?
Because we are the backbone of the country.
We are your teachers. We're your bank tellers. We're your bus drivers. You cannot go anywhere without it being affected by a Black woman. And we know that we just need women at the table, because right now there's only 15% of women in the legislature. Out of 174 legislators, 27. That's not enough.
More often than not, people have taken our vote for granted. That's why you see Black women organizing in the way that we are outside of parties.
It reminds me of Stacey Abrams, who's from Mississippi. She did a lot of civic engagement organizing outside of the party. Do you look at that experience at all in the work that you do and thinking of how you build up civic infrastructure in a southern state?
Absolutely. We have to have real relationship in community. We have to build trust in community. If you can get a community excited about fair wages, expanding Medicaid, we can organize them consistently around that. But if we get them excited about a person who fails them, we have to start over. That's why we organize here around policy, not politicians.
Tell me what your hope is for Mississippi.
To have representation that is truly reflective of the communities in Mississippi.
We're deserving. We fight the hardest. The South really fights the hardest, and we can't stop.
It was the most compelling state we went to, the most vexing state. There are a lot of problems here, but there's a lot of opportunity. I think there's opportunity for Democrats to have a little more money, but also opportunity for reconciliation, understanding, more economic investment in the state. A little understanding would benefit all of us.
Being here in Mississippi, you see that people are struggling here.
Yeah.
But don't you think really the whole country's struggling to find itself again?
Yes, from, you know, our core through six southern states, people are thinking for themselves and thinking, like, not listening to the
right
voices that they listened to in the last 10 years and really, really, really wanting to come out of this and have things be different and be better and not be so divided.
You can just see people struggling to find a better way. A new thing is being formed. I don't know what it's going to be, but it is forming into something different than what we've seen before.
For the new South to be born, to start that in Mississippi is like
amazing. It can happen.
I really do feel like the South is a place that tells the truth about who we are more than anywhere else.
From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, watch Long Play on YouTube at youtube.com/@longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And stay tuned. We'll be back in your feed soon with more episodes.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com.